The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. A lot of things to cover today. It is Friday. We're going to give you an update on Amy's fight to keep her children in Oregon. We have an update on everything that is happening in Washington. We have an update from a guest that we had yesterday, this amazing woman whose son died in the biggest day of death for our naval special operations. You'll remember it as, I think it was, was it extortion 17 or 18, something like that? It was the helicopter where everybody got onto the helicopter and the Afghanis blew it out of the sky. This happened, I think, 6 years ago. This changed her life. She was on the television show with me last night. And she's really going in a different direction. She's instead of hate, instead of anger, instead of curling up on a ball and dying, honestly, and instead of, you know, getting up and saying, I'm going to march to change Washington, she really has the answer. And I spoke to her yesterday on television, and there was an amazing piece that just kind of came out that we didn't ask her on radio yesterday, and I didn't expect this answer, and it is powerful. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
There is something in, yes, believe it or not, I don't read Teen Vogue, but I'm going to quote something from Teen Vogue because we have people on staff that read things so you don't have to and I don't have to. There is a journalist, her name is Lori Penny. She's the author of a new book called The Bitch Doctrine. And she says, many women you know are angrier than you can possibly imagine. Most are pretty good at hiding it, having been taught to do so since childhood. One of the questions I'm asked most often when I give talks about my books on gender and politics is about anger. Young women ask me how I get away with expressing anger and with such apparent ease, and they worry about men's reaction if they do the same. These questions are usually veiled requests for permission. Female anger is taboo, and with good reason, if we ever spoke about it directly. In numbers too big to dismiss, one or two things might have to change. Young women who will come to my events tell me that they want to be more forthright, but they're extremely worried about coming across as too angry. I usually reply that there are worse things to be. Stand up for yourself if you assert your right to self-respect and bodily autonomy. If you raise your voice above a whisper, if you leave the house with a sweet smile slathered across your face, some people will call you shrill, scold, a nag, bitter, and a bitch. That's all right. She goes on to say that you should embrace your anger. What kind of advice is this? What are we turning into? You should not embrace your anger. Where is your anger going to get us? And if I may just say, I know this because it's what we fought against in our own self during the Tea Party. We were angry and we all fought against the anger. I shouldn't say all of us. And what happened in the end? Because they kept shoving our face down into the mud, calling us names, calling us kooks, calling us crazy, calling us racists, because we said our states should have power and not the federal government. All the same things that Californians are now saying, that lefties are now saying, hey, maybe state rights, but they don't want to use that word. They want to use that phrase. Now they're pushing anger, and we are embracing anger. What one generation tolerates, the next will embrace. Well, we're embracing anger. So what are we tolerating? What's beyond that? And what does that mean for our children? So yesterday, I had a woman on the air. She was just fantastic. Do we have her book? What was the name of her book? Anybody remember?
Karen Vaughn.
Yeah, what was the name of the book?
We'll get it here in a minute.
World Changer, okay?
Yes.
So her son was killed in what I believe to be a government setup at worst. Government corruption at best. It was the largest naval special operations disaster in our country's history. More people died in one day with special operations than ever before. I think it was 35 people died. Got 35 people into a helicopter. Remember, this is the story where some of the Afghan advisors got off the helicopter at the last minute. Well, we found out some more from her yesterday. Now, you want to talk about a woman who could be angry? I asked her because she has a plan to move women forward that I really think is right. And I asked her, how did you not get wrapped up in the anger and the hatred because of your son's death? Listen to this.
How did you, you obviously heard the speculation. I have
right.
Navy SEAL friends who are beside themselves in belief that that was a almost an intentional takedown on our side. How did you not get wrapped up into that?
I actually did. My husband and I have actually been very vocal about this. He wrote a book in 2013 called Betrayed, the shocking true story of Extortion 17, because as we were given 2,500 pages of military testimony in a debriefing that the families were brought in for in October of 2011. And as we started reading through those pages, Glenn, we could not believe what was being done to the men and women fighting for this country. We were working with a group called the OCU, the OCG, the Operational Coordination Group of Afghanistan. They had eyes on every single operation special ops were running. They had eyes on our flight routes, our landing zones, everything. And yet military leaders told the families that there was no way the Afghans could have known where that chopper was going to land that night. The story is so broad and so complex. I don't know if you've heard recently that the AC-130 Spectre gunship overhead, the fires commander from that airship has started speaking out about the lies that the government told the family, the lies the military told the family. And one day, by the grace of God, Glenn, we will get to the bottom of what happened that night. In my deepest speculation, we trusted the Afghans. They were given intel. We were given intel based on Afghan intel because the air weapons team said nothing was going on. There was absolutely no reason for those SEALs to come in to make a really big story small. And yet the intel the SEALs were getting was that it's so hot there that a second chopper won't make it in. Get on one chopper, all of you. So 30 Americans and 8 Afghans piled into a single helicopter that night and were shot down by an Afghan that was in the landing zone. An Afghan, by the way, that the air weapons team above requested 8 times to kill before the chopper got there, and 8 times they were denied. It's a stunning story, and one day I pray, you know what I pray the most is for no monetary benefit to me whatsoever. I pray the most that it's made into a movie so that America can really see what happened that night, because it is a shocking revelation of what happened during the Obama administration to our war fighters.
So she did not give in to the anger and the what could have easily become hate. Here's a woman who has every right to be. She told me off the air about a story I'd never even heard of. She's like, you haven't heard this story about the Navy, I think he was SEALs, special operations guy, who had half his face blown off, was in Bethesda. His family comes after healing, after a reconstructive surgery on his face. Literally, he survives getting half of his face literally blown off. The hospital kills him because they gave him an overdose of morphine. Okay. All right. Well, is that fixed? No. No, because The hospital wouldn't admit that they did that. It was the family that insisted on an autopsy because the hospital said he just choked on his own vomit. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Yeah, he did. No, he didn't. No, there's no reason for an autopsy. Well, the hospital, Bethesda, our VA hospital, hiding this from the family. Now, we don't need to know this because they're going to sue or anything else, but because if you don't admit a problem, you'll never be able to solve it. This woman has reason to be real angry. Read something this morning from Psychology Today. Is there an emotion that is more understood than anger? Many believe that holding anger in is bad for you, that it only builds pressure and has to be expressed. In fact, sudden bursts of anger or prolonged anger are bad for you. A strong emotion that is accompanied by arousal of the nervous system, anger produces effects throughout the body. It eats away at your cardiovascular system, your gut, and hijacks your nervous system. It often obliterates the capacity to clear thinking. It may even grow in intensity. Express it, and you're not better off. Anger doesn't automatically dissipate by being unleashed. Rarely do we experience a catharsis. Venting it in words or action doesn't make anger easier to manage. Often it only increases the intensity of the feeling. Anger feeds on itself. Plus, by furthering aggression, it often brings irreversible damage to those in the immediate vicinity. We're all angry. All of us on all sides. We're all angry. And we all have a right to be angry. You know, in reading that story from Teen Vogue, I want to be fair to the author. She says, anger and hatred are different. It's all right to feel angry. And I believe that's true. She says, anger is not the same as hatred, although it's easy to confuse the two, especially in political climate where hatred of others comes easy and rational rage is met with mockery. Anger is a feeling. Hatred is an action. Hatred is anger applied indiscriminately, anger attached to the cruel, rage we reworked into an excuse to lash out at another person because of who they are or what they are. Anger itself is no more or less than the human heart rebelling against injustice, real or imagined, and often it has a damn good reason. Yes. But I don't believe that we are a culture that has ever benefited from anger. There's nobody. Remember, Moses and Jesus. Those are the two icons that our entire society, whether you like it or not, those are the ones that built the Western way of life. Now, we went wrong by saying, and Jesus wants me to torture you until you accept him. That's not Jesus. That's you. That's man wanting power. And there's no difference between the Inquisition and what's happening with ISIS. None. That's man wanting power and using God to disguise it. But in our culture, Moses, remember, wants to go kill all the Israelites. He goes to God, kill them all, please, kill them all. God says, back off. Jesus never gets there. Those are our two icons. So how can we say embrace your anger? I don't find that in the teachings of everything that built the Western way of life. Psychology Today was really, really good in what they said, that anger takes all of your reason and just chases it out. And that's where we are. We're all so angry right now, justifiably, that we're not thinking. I read an essay this week. I absolutely love this. It's On Stupidity. That's the name of it. On Stupidity. Letters and Papers from Prison from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. on stupidity. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the Gandhi of his part of the world. Listen to what he said. Now, remember, this is a guy who is in prison because of Hitler. He's trying to stand up against Hitler. See if any of this sounds like anything we're experiencing as a society. See if it's anything you're experiencing in your own circle of family or friends. Quoting Dietrich Bonhoeffer, stupidity is more dangerous of an enemy than malice is to good. You can protest against evil. It can be exposed, and if need be, it can be prevented by the use of force. Evil always carries with it the germ of its own subversion because it leaves behind in human beings a sense of unease. That's true. Against stupidity, we're completely defenseless. Neither protest, listen to this, neither protest nor the use of force accomplish anything here because reason falls on deaf ears. Facts that contradict one's prejudgment simply need not be believed. In such moments, the stupid person often becomes critical. And when facts are irrefutable, they're just pushed aside as inconsequential or incidental. In all of this, the stupid person, in contrast to the malicious one, is utterly self-satisfied and, being easily irritated, becomes dangerous because they will go on the attack. For that reason, greater caution is called for when dealing with a stupid person than a malicious one. Never again will we try to persuade the stupid person with reason. It is senseless and it is dangerous. He's not saying that the Germans were evil. He's saying the Germans had negotiated themselves into a place to where in such moments, any fact that contradicted your prejudgment just wasn't believed. When the facts became irrefutable, they were pushed aside as inconsequential, incidental. And then if you challenged them, they became angry and they went on the attack. Does any of that sound familiar? Does any of that sound like it is ringing true today? Does any of that sound like anger is a good thing to add in defense of the stupid or in defense of righteousness against the stupid? Anger will only ratchet it up. Accept the fact that we're all angry. But then what are we going to do about it? More on this and others later today. Also, Bill O'Reilly is joining us here in just a little while, in about 40 minutes from now. Our sponsor this half hour is Casper. Do you need to run the AC or the fan all night just to try to keep it cool in your house? My gosh, holy cow. I don't know about you guys, but it is so humid here and so nasty now in Dallas that I can't run the air conditioner cold enough.
It's at the point it gives up. It's like, I'm not going to win this battle against 103 and humid.
It's just nasty. If you have a heat-trapping mattress, get rid of it. Get a Casper mattress with two high-tech foams that guarantee you'll have a night's sleep that you will not forget in a good way. You'll sleep cool, comfortable, and fully supported every night. Try it risk-free for 100 nights. If you don't love it, they'll refund every dime and free shipping back. They'll take care of all of it. So you're out nothing. Try getting a great night's sleep in a great mattress. Try it for 100 nights free with free shipping and return. Go to Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. You're going to get $50 off the purchase of your mattress. You try this mattress out, they'll refund every single dime if you don't love it. It's Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply. Code name Beck. Casper.com.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
And it really is the Glenn Beck Program. This isn't a cheap imitation. This is the even cheaper original. Behind our cardboard microphones today, it is fantastic to have you here. I hate to get you all ratcheted up with anger. Here's Orrin Hatch on the raising of the debt ceiling. We shouldn't even play with that. It should just be clean. Some conservatives think that they can get some programs cut. Well, that's just not going to happen. And we have to pay our bills, and anybody who doesn't want to do that doesn't deserve to be here.
Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Suffering leads to hospitals.
Something like that, I don't.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I saw a story about a guy named Andrew Loomish. He was just featured on NBC News, a 46-year-old guy from Tampa, Florida, who happened to see the gravestones in a Tampa cemetery of these heroes. And they were all falling apart. I mean, you can imagine the, you know, the mildew and the mold and the stains and everything else just from, you know, the weather in Tampa for all of those years. So he went out by himself and just started cleaning these monuments and cleaning these, you know, cemetery markers. He's now cleaned over 500 monuments. And he's a guy who's never served in the military. And what I liked about this was it wasn't just some guy going out and doing something that I promise you at some point they're going to shut him down because of some environmental reason or some stupid thing like that. But what I liked about him was the fact that he understood and was connecting with history because of this. And I think there's something really cool about this. We wanted to get him on the phone. Andrew Loomish from Tampa, Florida. Welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Glenn, thank you so much for having me this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I saw your story a couple of days ago when it came out. And first of all, explain how you got into this and what you're doing and what you've discovered.
Okay. Well, it's kind of multifaceted. Initially, there's obvious reasons and there's some reasons that are personal. Part of it was I love photography and I photograph everything. I ended up stumbling upon a very old cemetery that was opened in 1850 in downtown Tampa, oldest cemetery in this area. And it was beautiful. So I began to photograph it. And then I went to a second cemetery and I noticed the same thing, the pure beauty of it. But something caught my eye and it was the incredibly poor condition of monuments of heroes that served in every conflict from the Mexican Wars to the Civil War to the Spanish-American War and up until World War II in Vietnam. And I saw how terrible they were, and immediately it kind of infuriated me. I was really upset by it. And so what I did is I began to research how to properly restore the monuments that are marble and granite and sandstone and every type of material. And I learned how to restore the monuments properly in the same way that they are restored in our national cemeteries, including Arlington. So I began to, on my day off, go to some of the historic cemeteries and restore some monuments. And that's how it began.
Okay. So, Andrew, a couple of things. First, I'm ashamed to say this, but my first thought when I saw this, my first thought was, how come he hasn't been stopped yet? And I don't mean because you're doing something wrong. I mean, there's got to be somebody out there in the government who can find something wrong with what you're doing. Have you gotten any pushback at all?
None whatsoever.
That's amazing.
I've been honored by the Department of Veterans Affairs because my story's gone viral several times. And they've kind of piggybacked a little bit because they share my story and what I do. I've been honored by Governor Rick Scott. At the state capitol. Actually, I was invited, and we had my assistant and I, we had dinner at the governor's mansion after receiving a wonderful volunteer award from Governor Scott and the Florida cabinet. And then this week, I was actually honored by all the Hillsborough County commissioners in the ceremony in downtown Tampa as well. So no pushback at all.
So the thing that really drove me to get you on the phone was... Do you listen to my program at all, or do you know who I am at all? I mean, I don't mean like, do you know who I am? I mean, have you followed at all that I'm really into history? And you said,
yes, I do know that.
You said one phrase that just sounded like it was twice as loud as anything else. You said, I'm uncovering history.
Well, initially, I told you earlier, initially it became just the restorationists themselves.
Yeah.
But it has evolved. And what I decided to do was, I have a wonderful assistant who helps me with research because I'm very busy. So she helps me fill in the blanks. And what we do now is we use different resources, online genealogy resources, libraries, and we are able to go back in time. It's 2017, so we're really fortunate there that we can do the things that we do. So we're able to look at an entire person's life. So not only will you see the before, what it looked like before, the terrible condition that the monuments were in before, but you'll see the after picture of the monument, but we tell their entire life story from the day they were born until their final day here on Earth. We talk about all their achievements, their accomplishments. I will say also, I was somewhat torn because sometimes you uncover some things that may not be particularly flattering, but I was torn as to whether or not when we're telling these stories about these heroes, whether we should talk about it. And yeah. We all have bumpy roads.
Yeah.
Nothing's a flat road. Nothing goes in a straight line. So early on, I decided we're going to tell their story, but we're going to tell it in its entirety. We're going to talk about
Good
the human nature. And we talk about, and we put it in perspective.
What was the thing that made you, what did you stumble on? You don't even have to tell me the name of the person, but what did you stumble across that you were like, oh man, what was it?
There's a catalyst to all this as well. I did not serve. However, I have friends who served. I also have had a wonderful assistant, and he was 12 years in the military, and I was his confidant in a lot of ways. And unbeknownst to me, I really don't talk about this much, but I'm beginning to open up about it a bit more. He was a great guy, super social, wonderful guy. 12 years, he was still a reservist. He worked with me. I was on my team. And one day, he just told me what he was going to do his entire weekend. And he went, he told me everything. And then I texted him on a Sunday to let him know what his schedule was for Monday. Well, a long story short, he had PTSD and he took his life. And when I do these restorations, and I had no idea. It was a complete and utter shock to me. When I do these restorations, I think of him. So not only do I tell the stories and complete these restorations, but he is always, always by my side because I don't want him to be forgotten either. It's very important to me.
What was his name, Andrew?
His name was Christopher Scala.
Tell me about the World War I veteran who died on the USS Tampa, a German submarine attack.
Incredible story. 18 years old. Louis Franklin Vaughn is his name. He was born in 1900, and at the age of 18, January of 1900, he joined. He ended up being, in the Navy essentially, and he served on the USS Tampa. By 1918, the war was coming to a close, and Germany was getting desperate. So all they had left, essentially, were submarine forces. And they were not going by rules of engagement, and they were submarining all ships going into England and London. They were torpedoing just supply ships that would be able to supply the United Kingdom. So the USS Tampa, what their job was at the time was to escort these supply ships to London and all over the UK to make sure that they were safe. Well, a torpedo on September 26, 1918, the German submarine torpedoed and killed everyone on board. So Louis Franklin Vaughan died on that day. But the interesting thing and the personal thing on Mr. Vaughan, or young Mr. Vaughan, was that before he chose to join the military to serve his country, he had three sisters. None of them lived to be beyond 14 months old. And I can imagine the conversation he had with his parents sitting at the table in his home. and they already lost all of their children. He's the only one who survived. And then he was killed by the Germans near the end, near the close of the First World War in September of 1918.
Is there anything, have you thought about, do the research on the person prior to or after or while you're cleaning the headstone?
A combination of all of the above. It all depends upon the circumstances. So, I mean, it's a combination. You know, it depends on the circumstances. Every situation has its own set of circumstances. Occasionally, I will take students with me, high school students who love to go, and I'll have them step back in the footsteps. And it's always good to know the history of the person in advance of that. So I'll have them stand in the descendants who would have stood there at the day of the funeral. And we talk about their life. We talk about what the world was like, what the United States was like when they were alive and when they died. And what's great about it is you always get these bad rips on millennials. The attention and the love that these high school kids from all these different backgrounds have for what they do, they get out. You know what it's like in Tampa. It's muddy. It's wet. And they don't mind. They sweat. They get out there, and they have a great time, and they learn a history lesson. So the negativity about millennials. But my experience generally, including my own son, who's about to turn 21, has been fantastic. It really has. It's been a great experience, and not just for them. It's very therapeutic for me as well.
Andrew, do you have a website, or what's your website?
Well, we're working on it. We're building a website right now. It's going to be thegoodcemeterian.com and thegoodcemeterian.org. But right now, we do most everything on social media. The Facebook page is called The Good Cemeterian. It's a very interactive Facebook page. We have wonderful interaction from all over the world. But the websites will be up and running in the next month or so. We also have a nonprofit, and we help organizations all across locally for the most part now. But we vet military organizations that do good, especially for those who came home and they need that help. I always think of Chris in these moments. So what we do is we help support different organizations so that they can achieve the goals that they want to, so that they can make the lives of those who served our country much more pleasant and much more adaptable once they get home.
Andrew Lumish, a guy who was a photographer who started something that is now becoming a life passion. And I think Andrew is I just have this feeling that what you're doing is way beyond anything that you might even understand at this point. You've started something really, really amazing. Thank you so much, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me this morning, Glenn. I do appreciate it. And thank you again. And thank you to all the men and women who serve our country. You are not forgotten. You are so important to the fabric of our society today. And we will continue doing what we do to support you.
God bless you, Andrew. Thank you very much. I hope to actually shake your hand sometime.
That's great.
Andrew Lumish.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
No kidding.
Fantastic.
Just doing anything outside in Tampa this time of year is a service to your country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. just walking from your front door to your car.
It really is.
I'm pretty brave and pretty heroic. I went to work once this week. I left my house, got into the car. I made it to the parking lot, and then I thought, I have to get out of the car and walk into the... And we don't have, you know, air-conditioned parking. And I thought, no. So I was at work technically, kind of.
And here's your purple heart.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad. What an amazing story. I want to tell you about William. William lives here in Texas. He wanted to sell a home that he inherited in California. Now, imagine the stress of trying to sell a house out of state. William lives here in Texas. He happens to be a listener of my program here in Texas, and he decided he wanted to go to realestateagentsitrust.com. And his agent, Brad, picked up the house and said, we'll take care of it. Within a week, Brad had a bidding war going on. William ended up with $30,000 more than the asking price, and the whole process was completed within a month. I am so proud of everybody that works with Mercury Real Estate. This was something that only my brother and I, Robert, believed. And this was a side project that we were like, we both felt passionately about. he really felt passionately about, because my experience was past. His was currently going on, trying to sell his home out of state and just running into so many hassles. And we were talking about it, and he's like, Glenn, I want to start a company. I want to, you know, if you'd help me, blah, blah, blah. I said, absolutely. So we talked about it, and I said, if I'm going to help you, you've got to vet everybody personally. I just want to make sure that it's just really, really right. Well, they went to work and found, I think it's 1,000 real estate agents across the country who are, I mean, when the stories that I hear make William's story no big deal. The story of, you know, a woman who was having a hard time selling her house, and it was because it didn't have curb appeal. So the real estate agent she hired, out of her own time, she didn't have to do this. She came over on the weekend and helped this woman paint her house on the outside, plant new flowers, et cetera, et cetera. And these people actually commit to you. Now, of course, everybody's story is different, but we have had now, they just made their 2,000th closing on a house at Mercury Real Estate. And the stories that come in are remarkable. You want to sell your house on time for the most money and make it a pleasant experience? Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. So the boys went to see Dunkirk. You have your review quickly of Dunkirk.
It was good. I didn't like it as much as you did. It wasn't Saving Private Ryan to me, but it was certainly well done. And
I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was great.
It was good. It was really good, but it wasn't the greatest movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. I don't think I said that.
You said it was one of the greatest war movies, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think it was
for me. It was great. Yeah. It was very well
done.
For me,
13 Hours was way better. I enjoyed that a lot more. And American Sniper. Yeah, those were great.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Lone Survivor. And certainly Saving Private Ryan.
I mean, those are hard because those were all friends of ours.
Go ahead. Just say you like a movie better than Marcus Luttrell. Yeah. Go ahead. Say it. Just do it. I wanted to hear it.
I don't, Marcus. I don't. I swear to you. It's Stu. It's Stu, not me.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. So I'm thinking, well, we've talked to Bill O'Reilly last week. So we talked to him about Reince and Scaramucci and Kelly. Holy cow. No, that's all happened in the last 5 days. It seems like the news cycle, anything with this much news, it would have taken us 2 months to be able to gather up this much news in one administration and in the world. It's only been a few days. We have a ton to cover with Bill O'Reilly. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So let's begin with the drama in the West Wing that we have not covered with Bill O'Reilly. He has been covering it on BillO'Reilly.com, where you can hear his no-spin news every day. And you get it, you know, without all of the bullcrap. Bill O'Reilly gives you the news and his perspective on it. At BillO'Reilly.com every day. We urge you to sign up. Bill, how's your week been?
Beck, it's been exciting, but not nearly as exciting as yours.
Well,
you know?
I know. I'm a younger, more, you know, just a stronger, better man, really.
Are you really younger than I am? I mean, you look so...
All right, Bill, you don't need to get cruel. Okay, so let's start here. We haven't even addressed, Reince leaving the White House and its ramifications, plus Scaramucci, and then all the way to Kelly. So let's start with Reince. Your thoughts?
Well, this is a very gutsy move by Trump, and that's what everybody's overlooked, because Donald Trump has now put himself in a position where if General Kelly were to walk out of the White House 2 months from now, 6 months from now, 2 hours from now, Trump's done. He's finished. So he's given his chief of staff, General Kelly, an enormous amount of power over him. And nobody has pointed that out.
Well, we did, but you don't listen to my show, so.
No, I do, but you must have lost that.
Yeah, you're usually sleeping, and then you get up, you have your early bird dinner, and then you go right back to bed. But anyway, this is pretty stunning coming from you.
You and I have pointed it out.
Yeah.
Me in a much more loud and vociferous way.
Right.
that the president, for some reason, has done a 180 and now put someone in a position of power that he himself really has no power over. Very fascinating. And the other fascinating part is that somebody had to tell Trump to do this. He didn't come up with it by himself. And I have not figured out who that person is.
Well, if you would have listened to my program, you would have seen the chalkboard. I could have outlined the whole thing for you. Let me, in a nutshell, say this. My view on this, Bill, and I'd love to hear where you think this goes off the rails, unless it's right at the beginning. my view on this is Trump knows that he has problems. Trump had no love for, you know, Priebus or the GOP or any of it. Knows that that's just all a failure. And, it, you know, in his opinion, they're all making him look bad. And he's brought them in. So there's one kind of people besides his family that he really, truly, deeply respects. And those are the people that have a military background. I really believe he really respects military men. He respects the discipline. And also there's something about the way, you know, they pet the cat because he is the commander in chief. They are yes, sir, no, sir. And it's all honor behind that. And I think that plays to the thing that he wants from everybody in a way. So when he looks at Kelly, because I took it as how would Kelly or why would Kelly take this job? He has no skill on Capitol Hill. He doesn't, I don't think, have any time to play that kind of a game. I think he looked at this as the White House is in trouble. This president is in trouble, meaning POTUS, not Donald Trump, not the party, but the president, my commander in chief, is in trouble. I can bring order to this, but I believe that Kelly went to him and said, Mr. President, I have no desire to do this, but I will. But you have to give me the control of the White House. And I think Donald Trump was so sick of all of this that he and respects Kelly that he said, go for it. But he has trapped himself now. You're right.
All right. So, number one, I love the pet the cat Blofeld 007 reference.
Yes.
Okay. That's the most important thing of everything you've said.
Yes. Thank you.
Number two, okay, Kelly himself doesn't really have to have any legislative duties at all because that's not necessary.
No, but I don't mean it that way. I mean it as a way to be able to go in and massage the party and, you know, kind of work all that.
He doesn't really have to do that. He doesn't have to do that. And I don't think that's in the cards at all for Trump ever because he's already blasting a party over this Russian thing.
Yes.
Ridiculous. But look, the reason that Kelly was put in there is to find the leakers. That's why he was put in there. Because you got to remember that Trump got burned on Flynn bad. So, yes, he's enamored with the military, understands that success in that arena can translate to success in civilians. But Flynn has been Trump's worst nightmare and continues to be. So what I think happened, and this is speculation, I don't like to do this, somebody very close to Trump pulled him aside and said, look, you're on the ropes now. And if you don't make a bold move, you're going down. Scaramucci isn't working out. Prince Priebus isn't working out. They think that Priebus is a leaker, by the way.
Yeah.
They being the Trump insiders. Yeah. They think that Priebus is the guy that's putting everything out. I mean, whoever put that transcripts out on the Australian and Mexican interviews, that's treason. That is absolute treason. And I'm not saying that from any ideological point of view. But you're basically undermining the ability of the President of the United States to have a private conversation with foreign leaders. I mean, that is just disgraceful.
Well, I will tell you this, that it's not treason, because treason has a very high and specific legal standard.
But I echo your
spirit of that anyone who is, I don't care who the president is, you are putting at jeopardy our president's credibility, and you are exposing private conversations of another head of state. Really reckless, dangerous, and you should go to jail for it.
Unbelievably dangerous.
Yeah.
So Kelly was put in there to stop all this, to handpick a staff that he believes would be loyal to Trump, and that's what he'll do. But the bigger picture is that this is Donald Trump's last chance.
So,
and I think Trump knows that. I think he knows that when you look at opinion polls, and a lot of people don't believe those polls because Trump won the election, and all polls say that he was not going to. But when you get a Rasmussen poll, a daily tracking poll, very friendly to the president, that's got him down at 38% job approval, you got to take notice of it.
Yeah.
And it's logical, because people are just tired. They're exhausted from every single day. Having chaos. So that's what's going on.
Bill, why do you think that this is his last chance and that he knows that?
Because you can't govern if your party bolts. And the Republican Party has pretty much bolted on Donald Trump right now. You don't see a lot of Republicans going out of their way to make his life easier. And the best example, and we talked about this last Friday in one of the classic Beck O'Reilly conversations here, okay, is John McCain.
Yeah.
As soon as McCain walked into that chamber and allowed Obamacare to continue, I knew that was personal. There was no doubt in my mind that if George W. Bush had been president, there's no way McCain would have done that, because there was no logic behind it. That bill, if McCain had voted for the repeal of it, would then gone back to the House, then back to the Senate. You had 15 chances to make the bill better, to put things in. And all McCain did was say, you know what? I hate Trump so much, I'm going to allow Obamacare to continue, even though the people in my state, Arizona, are getting hammered. So when you lose the ability to rally your own party, you're through as a president, i.e. Jimmy Carter.
So let me ask you this, because I think there's something else to this. And maybe you dismiss it. You know, I have the same kind of feeling that with General Kelly that I have to a much less degree with Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson seems to the average person to be a guy who can get things done. He's not a dummy. He seems reasonable. He seems like an adult. The same thing with General Kelly. With Kelly, he is legend. I mean, you're not going to blame Kelly on the way out for things. But I think Tillerson is in this same kind of category, that you're now, you know, you had clowns around you, right? Priebus, he's a clown. So you have clowns there. You get those guys out and that's fine. But when you start to get to the level of a Kelly or a Rex Tillerson, if they start to come out and say, you know what, which Tillerson is behind the scenes apparently saying, this is ridiculous. This is no way to run a country, and I'm questioning whether I want to be a part of it. If that kind of stuff starts to come out from people like Kelly and Tillerson, I think that's when he's really in trouble. It's not just the GOP.
He can't afford. Tillerson could go and Trump could survive.
Yes, I agree.
But not Kelly.
Not Kelly.
Not Kelly. No, Kelly goes, and then the whole Republican Party is going to revolt against the president. So the president's going to be sitting in the White House, and he's going to have two parties against him, nobody for him, and it's over. He'll just sit there as a lame duck. But Tillerson is an interesting study. I don't know much about him. Heather Nauert, Fox News, is his spokesperson at the State Department. But I think what Tillerson's frustration is that he goes in to negotiate deals with foreign powers, and the foreign powers basically don't cooperate because they think Trump is a weak leader who's not going to be there. And I think that Tillerson doesn't have the power that he feels he needs to make things happen. I think that's his frustration.
Well,
I don't know much about him. He looks like Bela Lugosi to me, and that's all
But I'm glad you don't play on the surface. But the other frustration he does have is he has not filled many positions in the State Department. And according to inside sources with him, it is because he can't find people that will kiss the ring appropriately enough for Donald Trump to approve. And the White House has been blocking some of his appointments.
You have secret sources, Beck? No,
I've read that from several sources, and I said that is apparently what's going on.
Anonymous sources, though? Do you name people?
Are you really going here, Bill? We're really going here.
I hate this anonymous sources business.
Yeah, I do too.
Right? But, if you're Secretary of State, you don't need a big squad. And don't tell me Tillerson can't get people from the private industry to come over and help him out. I mean, the guy's a former head of Exxon. He knows millions of people he could bring in. So I'm not so sure that's
accurate. Yeah, I'm not. Let me rephrase this. I got the impression that it was the White House. I shouldn't say that it was Trump himself. It might have been Reince or whatever, that there was this struggle internally that could never agree on, okay, yes, where usually somebody like that can just appoint who they need and move on, that it was all going through the White House and getting muddied up.
Maybe that might be true. I just don't know.
Let me switch topics. I'm going to give you the question, then we'll come back for your answer. But I want to stay on Rex for one more question, and that is, did you see the statement that he made about North Korea this week? And if you believe him on North Korea, and you take into consideration what you just said about people think that Trump is a lame duck president, and so Tillerson doesn't have the clout or credibility to do what he has to do, what does that mean in regard to that statement? We'll get Bill O'Reilly's comment on that when we come back, and so much more to cover with him. By the way, you can hear him every day at BillO'Reilly.com. That's BillO'Reilly.com. Last week in Chicago, a woman was carjacked. Now, this is a quiet suburb. Now, she's a concealed carry permit holder, so she's got a gun. She drew her gun. She acted to defend herself. When the local residents found out about this story, they all turned on her and said that she was to blame. Now, here's the thing. She never fired a shot. All she did, she is carjacked. She's by herself. She draws her weapon to protect herself, and the community turns on her and says she's the problem. That's the kind of world we're living in. You, the protector, that's why you have a gun. You're protecting yourself, you're protecting your family. I don't care. You take my wallet. Don't take my life. Don't take my family. Don't even begin to come close to that, because I'll shoot you dead. That's what she had. That's why she has that gun. She wants to protect herself and others. Well, who's protecting the protector? I want you to go to protectanddefend.com, and I want you to learn about the USCCA. They are the protectors of the protectors. They're the ones, because once the bad guy goes away that's wearing a mask, other bad guys show up, and they have suits and briefcases, and they're going to take you to court. And they're going to drag this thing out. It's usually about 3 years if you have to, God forbid, you fire your gun. But if you've drawn your weapon, they can usually drag it out to about 3 years. You'll be broke by the end unless you have protection. That's where the USCCA comes in. They will protect you. They will cover the legal side of everything, so your life isn't destroyed. Go to protectanddefend.com. Learn all about it. Protectanddefend.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Back with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. This week, Rex Tillerson came out, made a statement on and to North Korea that said, we're willing to sit down at the negotiating table. We need to have face-to-face talks, but what we are in right now is an intolerable situation. It cannot stand. It will not stand. And if you don't come to the table, military options, he led us to believe that military options will have to be used. Bill, what'd you think about that statement first? And second, tie that to what you said earlier about Rex Tillerson sitting down at the table with world leaders and them kind of laughing at him because they don't think Trump's going to last.
Well, first of all, I don't think saber rattling is effective with North Korea or Iran or any of these countries that are run by insane people. You know, I mean, they were rational people, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So saber rattling, you know, basically helps them and empowers them.
Yes.
So that's number one. That was a mistake by old Rex. Number two, Trump is absolutely capable of dropping whatever he has to drop on North Korea. I mean, if they don't think he is, you know, just the Syrian thing showed that, you know, if Mathis goes in there and says, look, we need to teach these guys a lesson, Trump's going to do it. He's not Barack Obama, who
right.
never, no matter what. So I think that's clear to everybody in the world. I don't think that has to, you don't have to say it over and over and over again. If the situation is indeed intolerable, that the North Koreans are making weapons that can be used to harm us, the United States, then basically you're going to have to send a couple of carriers to park right off the coast of North Korea.
They're already there.
That's number one.
Yeah.
No, but they're not there in the sense that they're threatening. They're cruising around. You know, there's ways to do this kind of stuff.
A B-1B bomber, you know, was cruising the skies in a very threatening way last weekend after the missile launch. I mean, you know,
I think it was more provocative than threatening. I mean, they're basically sending a message that
yes.
we can do this. We can do whatever we want to you at any time.
Yes.
But I think you've got to, you know, the next time that they do any kind of a launch, then something's got to happen in the sense that a blockade or whatever, just a symbolic action.
Yes. Okay. So, Bill, I'm going to take a break, and I want to come back. I want to ask you about the immigration reform and what's happened, the Russia okay. sanctions, and what happened with that. But I also want to talk about something that I'm actually glad. I mean, the president came out and said we're losing the war in Afghanistan, and I'm sitting around with a group of monkeys here in general hats. What are we doing? And I actually am glad the president has finally said, what are we doing after 17 years in Afghanistan? I'd like to get your thoughts on that. When we come back, Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, so let's go back to Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Let's start here with the president in a meeting with generals, apparently, very uncomfortable meeting in the Situation Room, coming out and saying, we're losing the war in Afghanistan, and I'd rather talk to the guys on the ground than you clowns, saying this to the general. I cheer. I am so happy to hear that. I don't know who is in the room. I don't know if they're all clowns or not, but it is about time somebody says, what the hell are we even doing besides getting into the middle of, you know, a prohibition situation in the poppy fields in Afghanistan? What the hell are we even doing there anymore? Finish it and come home, Bill.
All right, but they can't finish it because they being NATO forces, primarily backed by Americans, are incapable of imposing an orderly society on a primitive society. When I went to Afghanistan, Beck, I was flying in from London on a private plane, and the pilot said to me, we're going to land in 10 minutes. And I was up in the cockpit with the pilot and co-pilot, and I looked down, it was black. And I said, what do you mean we're going to land? Where are we going to land? He goes, we're going to land in Kabul, in Afghanistan, at Bagram. And it was one light in the whole country. I said, well, where are the lights? He goes, they don't have electricity. They don't have electricity.
No, so wait a minute. Hang on, Bill. We are not. See, this is the fundamental problem. We think we're there to nation build or save or leave them. Right. We're not. That's not what the military is supposed to do.
Right. So Mattis knows that, the defense secretary. And, you know, life expectancy in Afghanistan is about 40. Okay? Jeez. About 65% of the population can't read. So you're not going to get a nation that's going to function in a way that's going to protect its citizenry. So you have a decision to make, you being NATO and the United States. Do you pull out of there and let the Taliban come back in and run it, which is exactly what would happen, and then ISIS would form an alliance with the Taliban, and so you'd have ISIS camps and ISIS presence, just like you had Al-Qaeda before 9/11. Do you allow that? Or do you basically do a police action from Bagram and keep 10,000 troops there, NATO troops there, to allow the government to function and to keep the Taliban from taking over? So that's your decision. There's nothing else. And if President Trump thinks that we're going to win militarily, you're not going to win.
Yes.
All right? It's just not going to happen because Pakistan allows the Taliban to base on Pakistani soil.
Yes.
And you can't go in there to get them. So that's what it is. And so everybody should know what it is.
Russia sanctions. Your thoughts?
Yes. You have to have them. I think Trump makes a huge mistake in disparaging the Republicans for voting for it. Putin has to be taught a lesson, even if it's a symbolic lesson, which it isn't. These sanctions are going to hurt the Russian economy, which is already in bad shape. And Trump says, well, look, this impedes my ability to negotiate with Putin. Look, Putin, he decided to mess around in our election, and he's got to pay a price. Here's the price. Trump should shut up, all right? He signed the bill because he knew he would be embarrassed if he didn't. But there's no win for him, for the president, to keep whining about it.
No. And, you know, when we're talking about the election, this is the craziest thing. My wife said yesterday, somebody was talking about, you know, the election and Hillary Clinton and everything else. And it wasn't Trump. It was just somebody. It was on radio or something. And she never comments on political stuff. She just burst out, would these people shut up? The election is over. He won. Move on. Trump can't seem to allow any thought in his head that the Russians were trying to disrupt the election, not necessarily in his favor, nor is there any evidence that that even happened, but they were influencing our election. They tried to. He needs to separate himself from, you know, what Russia is saying out loud they want to do to the West all around the world. And we have evidence that they did try to do it here. They just failed.
Well, I think Kelly and Mattis are going to tamp him down. It's very interesting. This is a real indicator that, again, only Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly have pointed out to their respective listeners and viewers. After the announcement of the grand jury appointment by Mueller, the special prosecutor or investigator, okay, the left did what the left always does, is they want to ruin Trump's presidency and say, oh, he's guilty. You know, no presumption of innocence, none of that. I mean, if Mueller didn't put the grand jury up there, he would have been a SAP, S-A-P, SAP, word of the day. You have to do that because you have to subpoena documents. You have to get stuff if you're going to do an honest investigation, and that's what a grand jury does. Okay, so we all know that this wasn't a big news story. It doesn't say anybody's guilty of anything.
Nothing.
It just gives the special prosecutor more power to get the information. Okay, now, in the past, Trump would have tweeted his brains out saying that this was horrible, this was terrible, what's he doing?
Witch
hunt. I'm going to go to his house and put gum in his keyhole, okay?
Right.
That's what Trump would have done. Now nothing. No tweeting, nothing like that. That shows you the Kelly
influence.
Kelly basically said, look, whatever happens, don't say anything, don't tweet anything, and if you do, run it by me. You can vent on certain things, but other things, legal things, you cannot vent on. And so that's a big story. Yeah. And that's exactly what the discipline that Kelly is bringing. Remember, he's only been in there a week, and Kelly has, like, done amazing things in 1 week.
So what do you think about Donald Trump, you know, saying, I have nothing to do with it, I have nothing to do with it, and then finding out, which I think is a Reince Priebus leak here, that, oh, yeah, when he was on Air Force One, he wrote that, Donald Trump.
Oh, so what? Come on.
Wait a minute, Bill.
Come on. All right.
Hang on. Listen, it's never the crime. It's the cover up. And to,
okay, but this is bullshit. Hello?
Whoa.
No, okay.
Somebody.
Yes, Sarah?
Yeah.
You feel passionately there, Bill?
It's garbage. Listen, look, Donald Trump Jr. had a meeting with some Russian people, okay? All right, so we all know that. And then Trump, the father, finds out about the meeting, and he's coaching the kid as any father would do.
Right. So why wouldn't you say? So this is the problem. Hang on. My question is not to guilt or innocence or anything else. Is when will Donald Trump understand that you just tell the truth and it is fine?
It's several advisors telling him that.
Right. But you continue to say one thing and then it comes out the other, and it's just not going to work out well in the end.
Almost doing what MSNBC does, okay? There was a discussion about adoption in that meeting. That did come up from the lawyer herself. So Trump, being Trump, and any politician would have seized on that and said, hey, tell them you were talking about adoptions. There wasn't any dirt dished about Hillary Clinton. Again, no dirt. So Trump takes those two facts, at least that's the testimony by the Russians, and says, emphasize that. Well, that's not a crime. It's not a cover-up.
But, Bill, let's say that approach is completely fine. Because I think you're right. It was, I think, primarily about adoption. It was. At least as far as we know so far.
I don't even think it was.
That was
I
not
don't
the intent
was,
of the meeting, but that
I don't
was what,
think anything actually happened in this meeting at all. I personally think this was Putin setting Donald Trump and his family up because they snapped at the bait, I've got something. So they snapped at that.
But I don't know if it was Putin, but it was whoever.
It was somebody in Russia setting him up.
But my point here is, Bill, if that approach is correct, right, and you're right, it was primarily about adoption, you have two things on the table, options, that are fine. One, to say and give a little bit of the truth and say it was about adoption and hope no one finds out about the rest of it. Or two, you've got the email, you know it's going to come out eventually, you might as well just get out in front of it and be honest. They always choose the lower disclosure. They knew this was going to come out. They've got an investigation going on. This email's coming out.
He still doesn't think that way. He never thinks that way. I told you, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
The rich guy syndrome. It's all going to work out. We say what we want. But let's, I think all Americans who want the truth, and that's maybe half the country, the other half are just don't want the truth. They just want to go careen around. I am telling you that this is so low level, what this meeting, and that's why I want Mueller to subpoena these people. I want them to come in. It's nothing. And the facts of the matter are that if Trump colluded himself or one of his big guys, you're absolutely right, Stu. You're absolutely right. It's going to come out.
Okay.
Going to come out.
So let's go.
Don't cut him off now. He's making a great point.
But I just have like a minute left, and I do want to hit immigration reform, because this week at BillO'Reilly.com in one of your no spin cast, you said Trump's immigration plan going to crash and burn. So what does that mean?
That means that the Senate and the House will never, ever vote to change the immigration pattern from 1 million green cards a year to anything less. The votes are not there. It's not going to happen.
So what does that mean for the future? Does that hurt him getting the wall, getting other things? What does that mean?
He's still the anti-chaotic immigration warrior.
Great.
He's going to build a little bit of the wall. Sessions is running around deporting MS-13. The border crossings are way down. Trump wins on this issue.
Okay, so how does the GOP come out of this? I can't imagine the GOP has anything that they can win on in 18 or 20.
Well, he's got to win on tax cuts. And next week, let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, not Trump, the GOP. The GOP is over.
And Congress people are going to tell their constituents, this is what I want. So in the liberal Republican bastions like Maine, Collins will go, oh, I want, you know, Statue of Liberty, give us your poor, that's me. And in more conservative precincts in Texas, the Republicans will say, look, I wanted to cut it back. I wanted to cut it down. So it's an individual district kind of thing. Mm.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. We don't even have time to cover this, but I would imagine that you were as upset as I was with the lies about the Statue of Liberty and the spin of all of that would just make my head explode.
So
anybody who is into history, that just was crazy. Bill, what do you have coming up next week on Bill O'Reilly?
Well, we want to tell everybody that we have this kid's book, The Day the World Went Nuclear, and we were talking about North Korea earlier, and it's tied right in, and adults can read it too. It's just terrific book. That's out. Legends of the Lies of Civil War is out, Old School Life in the Sane Lane, which Glenn Beck is perfect. It's just about what Beck says every day. They're all out. And then next week we're going to do, on Wednesday, we're going to do a studio broadcast for the first time on BillO'Reilly.com, Beck.
Wow.
And you'll see how handsome I am now that I've been relaxing a little bit.
Oof.
We got the brand new clothing and
wow, brand new clothing. How much of you is CGI? Because that will watch it. How much of you is CGI?
Is CGI? What does that mean?
Oh dear God! Oh, wow. That means all of it is. That means all of it is really him. Mm-hmm. There's no computer generated images at all. There's nothing.
I have a mohawk haircut.
Okay. That should look.
A piercing and a nose ring.
That should look really interesting with the male pattern baldness at the same time. Bill, thanks so much.
Oh man, look at that cute shot.
As he's signing off, Bill, it's awful.
BillO'Reilly.com. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you next week. Now this Liberty Safe. They not only make great safes, but they make it easy now to own one. And now at Liberty Safe, you can buy one at a great sale price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $15 a month. We've been working with Liberty Safe for 7 years. This is just such a great company. They wanted to build everything here in America. So all the Liberty Safes are built right here. When you get, you know, a Presidential or one of their Lincolns or their is it Fat Boy? Big Boy? What is it?
The one I have is a Fat Boy.
Fat Boy, yes. Okay. That really wasn't a fat joke, but it turned into one, unfortunately. Liberty Safe, you'll have the peace of mind of having the best built safe.
You don't think that
was
just coincidence that they gave a Fat Boy to Jeffy? Who would have?
I mean, I thought it was nice of them.
Anyway, I've worked with them for 7 years, and I love these guys. I think they they perhaps may have a good sense of humor.
And they're observant.
Yeah.
Liberty, and they have eyes.
LibertySafe.com, the home of the best built safes on the planet. Get one now. LibertySafe.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
So glad that you are here. A couple of things. Found out that Apple owns $52.6 billion in U.S. treasuries. That is more than most foreign countries own in U.S. treasuries. Remember, you know, the idea is, you know, you buy our treasuries. That's how you're buying our loans. That's how you finance us. You're buying our treasuries. You're buying our bonds. Apple owns $52 billion in treasuries.
That's nice, Apple.
When a company owns $56 billion in treasuries, and they come to the doorstep and say, hey, we really need you to do X, Y, and Z for the company.
You're probably going to do X, Y, and Z for the company.
That's not
Otherwise, they could dump the $56 billion in treasuries. And what happens then?
That'll almost be blackmail. I mean, I don't think that would happen.
This is an awesome question because we all we all know that we have changed. You know, China can send us poison dog food and lead-filled toys, and we don't say anything because they own so many of our treasuries. With $56 billion in treasuries, more than most countries have, what does that afford Apple? Fascinating. More in a second.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Let's blow up the moon. Hello and welcome, America. We're so glad that you're here. Have you seen the new job opening for NASA? Six-figure salary for someone to defend the Earth from aliens. Not kidding. The gig is to help defend the Earth from alien and alien contamination.
It's a good wage.
It is a really good wage. $187,000 a year. I can do that. I'll do that. No aliens should come into our atmosphere. I'm good with that one. We have that. Also, something in AI that is blowing my mind. Artificial intelligence has begun to create its own language that humans can't understand, and we're standing around saying, should we stop them from talking like that? Nah! No, let them develop a language that we can't understand. That's nothing bad could possibly happen there at all. Also, Orrin Hatch and the movie reviews for the weekend, all coming up right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, so last time this happened was in 2007, right before all hell broke loose. Americans now are showing the largest decline in personal savings. Looks like we are now only saving, I think, 3.8%. We are now starting to spend our savings faster, and nobody's got anything left in the bank anymore. The last time this happened that was even close to this kind of decline in savings was right before the crash of 08. Does it mean anything? I don't know.
We should mention today, by the way, a very good unemployment report.
Good. What was it?
We're down to 4.3%, which is the lowest
Excellent.
It's been in 16 years. I think we also touched it in May, but it's the tide for the lowest that we've
Are
had.
Are we looking at those who have left the job
yeah,
force?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually pretty good on that front as well. 209,000 jobs created, which was above expectations. And it was, I did look at, I saw the report that you were talking about with the, you know, the people coming out of the workforce, and that those numbers look good too. I don't have them
good.
In front of me right
Excellent.
Now. But
Excellent.
It, you know, again, it's 1 month, but a good report. So
I'll
that's
take
positive.
A month as long as Absolutely. We're not playing numbers, as long as we're not playing games that we wouldn't accept in the Obama administration. Don't look at 4.8. Well, how many jobs were created? How many people are leaving the workforce? What is the number or percentage on welfare or on government handouts? But I believe those numbers are going down pretty dramatically, are they not?
I don't have that in front of me either.
Yeah, we should look that up. Maybe we can do something on that on Monday. Sure. What is the story on the Secret Service that has to move their command center outside of Trump Tower into a trailer?
It's a lease agreement issue, correct?
But don't they know the guy who runs the tower?
I don't know. Well, do you know who it is? I don't. We could look it up.
I'm not sure.
What's the name of the building?
I'm not sure, but I think his name is on it.
It's the Trump Tower.
So
right?
So Secret Service had the floor directly under Donald Trump, And for some reason, there is a lease problem. And so now the Secret Service is watching the president outside
from in a trailer.
A trailer. The neighbors must be so happy to now have, you've turned it into a trailer park. We've taken Fifth Avenue and put trailers now in the street.
Not to mention you're talking about the security and safety of the president of the United States. Family.
I mean, don't know what is happening there, but
pretty weird.
Work it out and don't work it out to anybody's enrichment. Remember, we're talking about the security of the president, and we're also talking about the taxpayer's burden. Can we cut the Secret Service a slack? And I'm not saying that they should be welcome to the whole floor beneath him.
Maybe that's what they're trying to do though, right? Because she's not even there.
As a capitalist, as a capitalist, I don't believe that the government should be able to come in and just say we're taking this over.
No, I mean, they should pay for it. But, yes. I mean, we pay for a lot worse stuff than the security of the president.
I agree with that.
He's not really been there, though.
That's what I'm saying. Since she moved out, maybe that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
There's no need for them to have the whole floor.
They say, They say after the Trump Tower said, after much consideration, it was mutually determined that it would be more cost-effective and logistically practical for the Secret Service to lease space elsewhere. Trump has not visited Trump Tower since his inauguration. It costs $130,000 a month for the White House military office, which does have a location in Trump Tower.
Right. So if it is just truly because he's not going to go up there and we don't have to worry about that and we got people in, that's great. Let's save money, but let's make sure that the economics are fair to both sides, not just the capitalist, but also to the taxpayer as well.
It's a weird situation considering the guy owns the building. So I can understand it being a little strange.
Yeah.
However, I mean, does anybody care? I mean, Barack Obama, Donald Trump,
I do.
George Bush.
Does I cared any, then.
Well, what I'm saying, I didn't even finish. How would you know if you cared about the thing I'm talking about? I haven't finished it.
Because they've all spent so much money and we all have to keep them all safe, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue here is we need them to be safe and cost isn't a consideration when protecting the president's life. No matter if it's Democrat, Republican, I don't care. Obviously, if it's a complete waste of money and none of the people in the military or the Secret Service think it's valuable, then you change that. But it's not a consideration for me.
Okay, so the woman who encouraged her boyfriend to kill himself via text has now been sentenced to 15 months in jail. Now, this is the girl whose boyfriend had been saying, hey, I want to kill myself. I want to kill myself. And then she started to encourage him. And in fact, he stopped in the middle of the act and texted her. And she said, what are you doing? Get back into the car. I'll stay with you on text. Get back in the car. I mean, she was an accomplice to his suicide. And, where's the line there? Should she have gone to jail? I think she should have.
It's a really hard line, though. Because, he did it. She didn't.
Yeah, but, wait. There's a difference between, as I told this story before on the air, my mother committed suicide. My aunt, for a while, felt burdened because we didn't know this as kids, but my grandparents and my aunt had been trying to counsel, trying to get her to see doctors, everything else. And in a moment of frustration, the Sunday before my mother killed herself, she said, Joanne, I think I'm just going to kill myself. I just can't live this way anymore. And my aunt, just not thinking and being so pissed about, well, I've given you every option. We've tried to help and you won't do anything. Said, you know what, Mary, just do it. Now, she didn't mean that. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between that and what this girl did. What this girl did was, wait, you stopped? Get back into the, get back into the truck. That's inhuman.
It is inhuman. Whether she should be convicted of, causing the murder, I think, is another story. I mean, we do have people who go to jail, though, for not doing it. I mean, Charles Manson, right? I mean, there is a level where that does apply. It's a weird one here. It's a tough line. Because, look, you got to take responsibility for your own actions. If people encourage you to do things and you do them, that's really your fault, right? I mean, that is,
But it's not She just didn't say, go do it. She said, get back in the truck. You're strong enough to finish yourself off. I mean, here's right. somebody in a
that's
very...
That's taking a physical action still, though. It's, it's still not...
And if I remember right, and by the way, she's free pending appeal in Massachusetts, so she was sentenced, but there's a stay with that. If I remember right, they didn't even have the text messages, right? This was based on her texting and talking with her friend after the fact. So they didn't actually have the text messages that she, you know, that they claim happened. It was just her talking to one of her friends saying that that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, this is one of her numerous text messages. You always say you're going to do it, but you never do. Get back, quote, get back into the truck. I mean, you know.
We had a libertarian on Pat and Stu a few weeks back about this. Who wrote an op-ed in the New York Times. He writes, Miss Carter's conduct was morally morally reprehensible, just like my pronunciation of reprehensible.
Yeah.
But at least until today's ruling, it was clearly legal. While some states criminalize the act of convincing people to commit suicide, Massachusetts has no such law. Moreover, speech that is reckless, hateful, and ill-willed nevertheless enjoys First Amendment protections. While the Supreme Court has carved out narrowly tailored exceptions for literal threats of violence and incitement to lawless action, telling someone they should kill themselves is not the same to holding a gun to their head and pulling the trigger, nor is it akin to threatening to kill the president, which is specifically prohibited by law, and in any case, only considered a felony if done knowingly and willfully.
So I'm not saying that she murdered him, you know, but is there no crime here at all? Really? I mean, this is the anti-Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is morally reprehensible.
Reprehensible, right.
But none of those people who walked by him were charged with anything.
No, no, no. She didn't walk by. She didn't walk by.
I know.
She stood around and said, hey, you, come here. Come here. Throw rocks at that guy. I mean, that's what she was doing. Mm-hmm. She's the anti-Good Samaritan.
Right, like that's inciting a crime.
But she, what she did was stand, let's say the Good Samaritan, you know, was suicidal. You know, the guy on the other side of the road, the Good Samaritan went over and helped. She went over and said, do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Jump.
Kill yourself.
Jump, right.
Like, I mean, that's craziness.
Again, I think there's a disgust element of this. It's such a disgusting act. It winds up overwhelming what is legal and is not legal. I mean, we have
which
a system that's not...
Sentence.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they were
asking...
System,
right, they wanted 20 years. They got 7
So then why
years,
do we have a problem with the guy in Russia with, what is it called, the blue whale or the big whale?
Yeah.
The guy who apparently has been talking people in, and we don't even know if it's true. He's in jail, but it's a Russian story. That was talking people into committing suicide, you know, by just saying, hey, I'll bet you that in 30 days I can get you to kill yourself. And people are killing themselves. Now, why is that? So should he not go to jail? Should I be allowed? Should somebody be allowed to go on and say, hey, I got this new game. It's a suicide game. You know, I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to convince you to do it.
Yeah,
giving them people the choice. I don't know. It's their responsibility, right?
Right. I think there's two parts of that. One is the blue whale game was targeting minors. So I think there are different lines there. In addition to that, it's not that she shouldn't have been charged with something. First of all, the law needs to be on the books if you're going to charge them with it. So what they did is, because they don't have the law about convincing other people to commit suicide as a crime, they just charged her with manslaughter, which I don't know if that's the appropriate crime.
Okay,
like, should she be charged with something? I think you can definitely make that argument.
So let me ask you this. If someone was targeting our veterans, all who had PTSD, and was targeting them and saying, do it, kill yourself. You know, all these people in your life saying it's worth and you can get by and they're all lying to you. Do it. You keep saying you want to kill. I thought you were a hero. I thought you were a big man. You can't even kill yourself. If we had evidence that somebody was doing that to our heroes, to our military, would we think that person should go to jail?
But again, you're upping the moral disgust element, which is legitimate.
Right.
And it is a morally disgusting act, and you've escalated it even beyond this case.
But I haven't. The only thing, the only reason why I picked those military guys is because there's a group of people, no, because there's a people who we know are suicidal and they are weak. It's not because they're military, but it's because these guys, we know they are on the edge. That's the part I can't get. It's the Good Samaritan. When you see somebody down, you don't go and kick them in the face.
Yeah. Again, I'm only making a legal argument here. I'm not justifying these actions. And the issue is, if you, this is like one of those things. Well, we really want it to be true, and we didn't ever actually pass the law against it. Let's find something else.
No, if there is no crime on the book that clearly fits it,
and do you think manslaughter fits this? I mean, I don't
know. Define manslaughter.
Right. I mean, I can look up a legal definition.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean, if you know, I'd have to see the legal definition. If there's nothing that legally fits that, then I guess not. But I mean, you should put one on the books, because we're becoming this depraved society. And now this. You go on vacation and your home is empty. Burglars see the signs that you're not home. No cars in the driveway, no lights inside. And it's an open invitation for a break-in. That's why Simply Safe Home Security is there. And they've extended their biggest ever summer sale that ends August 13th. 10 days away? Is it today the 3rd? It's the 4th. 9 days away. It is a whopping $100 off their special summer package, which is the package that I have at our house. This is what we use. It, you know, makes sure that if the glass is broken, if the windows are open, the door is open, et cetera, et cetera. That you have a siren that's going off and it's automatically calling police. It is, I think, $399 is their summer package. You get $100 off if you go now to simplysafebeck.com. You're going to save $100 off of this package. You own it. If you want the round-the-clock security for police, fire, ambulance, all that stuff, all you have to do is ask them to cover it for the month. It is not a contract. You're not signed into anything. It's $14.99 a month. So for $15 a month, that's it. This is honestly, I don't understand why anybody who has security is not using Simply Safe. It is the new way to keep your family and your home safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com. That's simplysafebeck.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, so they charged this woman in California?
Massachusetts.
That said, you know, to her boyfriend, hey, kill yourself for a long time. He had been threatening to do it. When he finally does it, he gets out of the truck at the last minute, texts her. She apparently begins to text back, what, you can't finish this? You always say you want to do it. You're strong enough to do it. Get back in the truck. And convinces him to get back in the truck and kill himself. 15 months in jail is what she is coming down to. But they charged her with, and this is, I heard manslaughter, and I asked Stu for the definition, but she wasn't charged with manslaughter. She was charged with involuntary manslaughter, which means she didn't mean for him to die.
Which takes away the entire case.
Yeah, because that's the point of this. She obviously wanted him to die.
So if you're saying she didn't mean it, then she really didn't commit a crime. That's like,
absolutely. Then it's a joke crime.
Right. So that's right. Because, I mean, involuntary manslaughter refers to an unintentional killing. So, again, that doesn't strike that. If you think she committed a crime, you have to believe she wanted him to die and it was intentional. So you can't give her an involuntary.
Maybe they tried to make the case that, no, she was trying to teach him a lesson. She was trying to, you know, I can't make this work. But, you know, maybe she was just trying to say, do it. Like my aunt did that one time, and she didn't mean that. But I don't know how you make that case with the long record of her, you know, encouraging him.
Yeah, and involuntary manslaughter really doesn't apply. The killing of another person that is intentional but has a mitigating factor to it. Heat of passion caused by reasonable provocation?
No.
Heat of passion caused by sudden combat? No. Excessive force used in self-defense or in the defense of another? No. I mean, involuntary manslaughter is usually applied as a car crash, right? Like you kill someone or you screw up at work on a carnival ride and the ride falls apart and people die. Like those are usually involuntary manslaughter type of situations.
Let me switch subjects here quickly. Facebook just put two AIs together to solve some problems. And they stopped this when the language started to say things like this. I, everything else. To which the other AI, it's Bob and Alice. Bob said, I, everything else. Alice responds, balls have zero to me, too. And they were having conversations like this. And they realized these two computers, these two AIs have just made up an entirely new language. They knew what they were saying to each other, but we don't know what they're saying to each other. Should we stop this or
yes.
not? The answer is yes. Yes, that's an easy one. Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
If you are a longtime listener of this program, you know that I have told you many times in the past, insanity runs in my family like a pack of wild elephants. And I think this next story will prove that. I'm going to introduce you to somebody. He's my nephew. He was in the military and did his service and came back like a lot of our vets do. Coming back, had some issues, had to deal with them, and I finally see my nephew again, the man that the boy that left before the military, and now the man that he has become after the military. But it's been a hard journey, and so we're sitting at the Easter table, and he's down with his family, and about halfway through dinner, he said, "So Uncle Glenn, I want to tell you something." I said, "Okay." He said, "I want to get into a rowboat and cross the Atlantic." And I said, "Oh, dear God, let's get him to a hospital." And he showed me this video, and it's incredible. There is a race. I didn't even know this. There is a race of people that go across the Atlantic in rowboats. That's stupid. There's airplanes now. But anyway... So what he wants to put together is this team. He's got a group of guys that they're all vets. And this would be the first all U.S. veteran team to ever row across the Atlantic. Mm. Bo is joining us now with this crazy idea. Welcome to the program, Bo. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Glenn?
Good. So... Bo, do you feel comfortable at all talking a little bit about your journey here after, service?
Sure, absolutely. What would you like to know?
Well, I mean, I obviously know it all, but I mean, can you, in a nutshell, talk a little bit about the struggle that you went through and so many of your friends have gone through, PTSD and everything else when you come back home?
Sure, yeah. Coming back is difficult for everybody, I think, and everybody deals with it in their own ways. I certainly had, some of my own struggles. Substance abuse was one of them. Just disconnected from my family and anybody who cared about me. And it was quite the journey to get to where I'm at today. We see it in all of our friends, all of our brothers and sisters that are coming back, and suicide is a big one. And that's what this whole rowing journey is about.
Right. You've named this fight or AOR, die. We have a history of suicide in our family, me with my mom, you with your father, and friends now that are coming back that are killing themselves. So you've put together, tell me about the team that you've put together. Who are these guys?
So we have Alex Evans, Bryant Knight, and Chris Kuntz. And Alex and I served together overseas, and then over the years I've met Bryant and Chris. It's paratroopers, Army Rangers, and Special Forces guys.
And, you know, all of us have dealt with these problems ourselves and see it in every one of our brothers or sisters that have done the same. So
you get into a boat, and it's not just like a rowboat. This is an amazing boat. You get into a boat, and you row for 50 straight days. It's crazy. But this boat is a different kind of boat. Can you explain what it is?
Sure. So the boat is it's designed specifically for ocean rowing. It has basically two small cabins in it so that you can sleep. And all of your navigation and whatnot is in those areas as well. For our boat, it's a 4-man boat, so we'll have 3 rowing stations. We plan on rowing 2 guys at a time, and it rotates every 2 hours. And the boats, you know, they have solar panels and water makers, and it's 100% self-sustained. So all of our food and water and everything is on the boat when we go. It's about a 28-foot boat that we're going to take across the ocean. So
you want to do this, and it's not just for you. When you come back, the thing that really excited me about this is when you come back, you're going to be the first all U.S. veteran team to ever do this. But when you come back, you want other vets to do this.
Yes, absolutely. We as, you know, fight or die, our team, we're not just rowing it to go do it ourselves. We want to start, you know, we're trying to spark a fire in the veterans in the country to get involved, to start doing this stuff, to take action, you know, and help out your brothers and sisters, because there's a lot of great organizations out there, but we're not winning this fight, you know, when we come back, and we want to win. And so we want everybody to start getting involved. If, you know, if you're a veteran, it doesn't matter what branch, how long ago you served it, you know, to us, we need to get the team back together, so to speak, and start helping each other out, because, you know, we need to get that team back together and help each other like we used to.
So here's how you can help. You can go to the website, usvetrow.com. They've got kind of a tight window here. By August 18th, they need to raise, what is it, 50,000 by
yeah,
August 18th?
Correct.
So they have to raise $50,000 to be able to get the boat. This competition, this race actually happens in December. And again, if they can make it this December, they will be the first U.S., all U.S. veteran team to attempt this, and hopefully you would win. But they need your help to raise money for the boat. And then, again, they have you can find it on the website at usvetrow.com. They have a plan to actually have this go on in perpetuity to be able to help our vets. And I will tell you, the things that work with our vets, I know people who have started hunting camps. You've talked about that, Bo. You've helped on some of those.
Absolutely.
But, you know, they started hunting camps. It's a different way. Our vets recover in different ways. If you said to me, hey, by the way, you feeling a little down? Good. Get your ass in a boat and we're going to row across the ocean. I think that would push me over the edge. But for the vets, it works. So find out all about it. And if you can help, please do. Fight or die. Bo, thanks. I'm proud of you. And I am so proud of the progress that you have made. You have gone through hell and came out the other side a man your father would be very proud of.
Thanks, Glenn.
Appreciate it, Bo. Bye-bye. Find out all the information at glennbeck.com. We spoke earlier this week about, remember, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the chalkboard that we outlined for you over the last couple of days. If you've missed it, just go to glennbeck.com and you can find it. We did the chalkboard on television on Wednesday, and yesterday we did it here on television and tried to explain this timeline of this IT, I don't even know what you would call it, crime family of some sort. something was going on with the DNC's, you know, and Democratic congressman's IT department. Started with one guy, started with the one congressman in Florida, then jumped to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And the best case scenario is that this family and group of friends from Pakistan, they were all people that seemed to have a streak of larceny in them. They have tried to blackmail others in the past with what little we know. So the best case scenario is they got in to Congress. They started finding out information through access granted to them on their email servers. And they started blackmailing the congressman just for money. And not necessarily for any other reason overseas. Then it looks like they hit financial trouble. Now, this family, there's six of them, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrats were paying them $4 million. They were making salaries of $120,000 and above when the top salary in that category in Congress is $40,000 to $60,000. So they're making double the highest paid person IT, and they keep hiring their friends, some of them like literally right from McDonald's.
Yeah, and if you're a Blaze TV subscriber, which of course you should be, if you're there, go watch the chalkboard. We did it on radio and you did it on the TV show about this story, because it's a very difficult one to kind of like not be able to understand without conceptualizing it visually. You kind of have to see that timeline. But when you see this, what it's all laid out like this, none of it makes any sense. I mean, there's obviously something missing major in the story.
Yeah, not you can't. The best case scenario is, in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stu, what this Debbie Wasserman Schultz story is, best case scenario, group of people who are just grifters. And they come in, they get a foot in the door of Congress, and all they're going to do is just start blackmailing people. And it's no national secrets. They're not doing it against the United States or anything else. They're just blackmailing
people.
They want
money. They want money.
Mm-hmm. Then they start spending that money and it gets out of control. They have to declare bankruptcy. Then somebody overseas calls the lead guy, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, IT guy. He goes over to Beirut. He meets with a guy who's connected to Hezbollah. That guy, we know, gave him $100,000 as an investment. Okay. So perhaps at that point, Hezbollah, somebody overseas is saying, hey, we'll help you out, but you got to get us some information. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, these guys who now the family is over in Pakistan, the main ringleader is here in America. But the worst case scenario is this is full-fledged espionage, and they were blackmailing several of our congresspeople. Here's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, her latest comment on this. Now, remember, I just gave you, am I right, Stu? That's the best case scenario
you can think? As good as you can get. I mean, remember, the other part, he was arrested for bank fraud. Yeah. And so at the very least, we think bank fraud has been done, but it looks much worse than that.
I want you to hear what Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she is still defending this guy.
Not only that I believe that I did the right thing, and I would do it again. Because, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, there are times when you can't be afraid to stand alone, and you have to stand up for what's right. And, you know, even in the face, you have to... There are times you have to spend political capital to do what's right. Like I said, the easier thing to do for me would have been to just fire him. Obviously, I was the person who's had the most political challenges in the last year, so it would have been much easier for me to just cut him loose and say, you know, I'm going to look out for my best interests rather than stand up for what I believe in. But I have to be able to look at myself in the mirror every day.
Unreal.
And if there's one thing I'm going to make sure that I maintain is my integrity.
Oh, like what are you fighting for?
Yeah,
because this is obviously you can apply that defense to a numerous amounts of issues, but why this one?
Yeah, when he's been so shady and there's been clear violations like bank fraud.
Yeah, I mean there's clear.
Come on,
there's clear bank fraud. His wife you know, escaped the country and is now under the protection of the Pakistani government. Something is not right here. She's not saying, hey, I did the right thing at the time, but I didn't have all of the evidence. What she's saying is, I'd do exactly the same thing today. Mm-hmm. I'd make the same choices knowing what I know now. I've got to back him up. I still back him.
I do it because I wanted to do the right thing, which makes it would just, are they just so close? Like, I was so close friends with this guy, I would never believe he did anything wrong, and I don't think he did. If that's true, why are you firing him now? If you believe he was innocent, I mean, you know what? You might suspend his salary while he's in jail,
something really wrong here. All right. Our sponsor this half hour is Goldline. This is a really frightening stat. You need to pay attention to this one stat. It just came out. People have stopped saving for a rainy day. The U.S. now has the household savings ratio has fallen to 3.8% on a net basis. The monthly ratio is savings as a percentage of disposable income. So what you have is disposable income. You save in anything, it's now down to 3.8. The only other time this has happened was right before the 2008 financial crash. People are not saving, and it's not just because they don't have money to save. They're spending it. We're in another reckless bubble. Please, please consider all of your options. And look, this could be the big one. Look at what is coming and how you're protecting yourself, please. For as little as $2,500, you're going to get 3 months of price protection all the way up to a year for $25,000 of investment in physical gold that you hold. Goldline is extending its price protection programs right now. Call them 866-465-3546. It's 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, so Gizmodo just, they published a story and say that, you know, there's this thing about their robots at Facebook, you know, communicating with each other in a language that humans, you know, didn't understand. It's a story we just gave you, and they're trying to debunk it, but they're actually saying the same thing that I am. This was not anything nefarious with AI. This was not anything that is of any consequence now. This was an experiment on negotiation. What happened was the AI robots started talking to each other in shorthand, a language that we didn't understand. When they stopped everything, the conversation was and should be, should we allow computers to develop their own language when they speak to each other, a language that we don't understand? That's the question. The answer, no.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.